Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 21 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Oh, today we're going to be talking about how to harvest happiness. Yeah, it's not Mission Impossible. Relax, we got ways to do this. And boy, do we have a leader in the field, a pioneer, Lisa Cybers came in to help us through that. But before we begin, I want to make sure you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so good. To learn more about them, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really read these and we love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
And it's also time to harvest happiness with none other than Lisa Cybers Kamen. Oh my goodness, she's got a wide-ranging, decades-long career where she's looked at this issue of the pursuit of happiness. She's a documentary filmmaker, positive psychology coach, author, syndicated radio show host, and lecturer. She is first and foremost an expert in the skill of harvesting happiness, even under life's most challenging circumstances. The name of her book is Are We Happy Yet? 8 Keys for Living a Joyful Life. Lisa, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Hi, Dr. Pam. Let's do some naked truth about happiness.
Yeah, well, let's all get naked about happiness. Okay, look. I mean, things are a little rough out there, right? That's sort of the understatement. Good grief. People are holding down two jobs. They're single parents. They're, you know, running around trying to deal with everything from trauma, abuse, addiction, all the things that you deal with when you talk about life crisis recovery. So let's start with, what does harvesting happiness really mean?
Well, the idea of harvesting or cultivating happiness or joy or a more fulfilling life is really about, you know, planting the seed, seeing our positive emotion as within our grasp, that it's something that we need to tend to on a daily basis, like a garden, that we have the ability to grow this positive emotion or well-being over time.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I know that there's probably a boatload of women out there who are listening in on the Her podcast, and they're saying to themselves, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. Harvesting happiness. I haven't even felt happiness in a long time. How do you begin to harvest happiness?
Well, you know, it comes from a very different place than we think, you know. We tell ourselves, I don't have time to be happy. I'm holding down multiple jobs. I'm running my children around. I've got to worry about my aging parents. You know, the story that we all tell ourselves, that we are too busy for the one thing that matters most, which is our self-care. And if we look at our emotional well-being and our emotional life, similar to the way we look at our physique and our ability to change the vessel that us are carried in, that we are carried in, then we train for it. You know, you're a peak performance athlete, no pun intended. You didn't get that way. You didn't just wake up that way. You train.
That's interesting. You know, that whole issue of training, it's work. You know, I think a lot of people think that good things in life sort of fall in your lap. And maybe you just luck out that day. Of course, we always remember the definition of luck, and that is when preparation meets opportunity. Hello, preparation. It means we've got a little work laid down somewhere along the line, right? But, you know, again, how do you even define happiness. You know, it's so interesting, Lisa. I've talked to, you know, so many women especially, and I say, what makes you happy? And I get this blank stare. But if I ask them what makes their partner happy, their kids happy, the guy next door happy, their dog happy, I don't know. You know, I get this long laundry list. What goes on there, Lisa?
Well, we tend to identify our happiness from external sources. We look to our partners. We look to our children. We look to the next best designer handbag. We look to our jobs. We look to all of this stuff that is external. And the relationships that we have, I have to say, above all else, are an important ingredient to human happiness. But that H factor, or that happiness factor, starts from an internal place. So if the relationship with the self is not being tended to, and that relationship with the self really goes back to, are we physically fit, emotionally fit, psychologically fit, and spiritually fit, happiness is going to be pretty challenging.
Oh, gosh. There's absolutely no question about that. And I know you address this in your wonderful book. I mean, it's just a fabulous book. Are We Happy Yet? 8 Keys for Living a Joyful Life. Can you tell us about the book?
Yes. Well, this book is about 320 pages of goodies, including lots of quizzes and surveys to help you identify your happiness set point, to identify areas in your life where perhaps you have been blocked from your own happiness. And the block being positionality or grudges or judgments that we are holding against ourselves and others, because these really are obstacles. And what's interesting about when we get stuck in a position, you know, we're upset about something or angry, and anger can have a very useful source to us if we use it wisely. But if we're not using it wisely, and by wisely I mean to catalyze change, then we're actually hurting ourselves. So to be able to move past some of these emotional blocks is essential, and identifying what will replace it once we release it. Because sometimes we stay stuck because we don't know what to put in its place.
Well, it's also interesting that, you know, someone once told me something so wonderful. I keep sharing it right and left. And that is so many people believe what other people say about them. They allow other people to define them. Right. And
yeah.
So one day I was told this by one of my dear, dear friends, who's an exceptionally wise guy in more ways than one. And he said, you know, that's their story about you, not your story about you. And if you take a moment and ask yourself, do you even know your own story? Or are you allowing everybody and his brother and sister to define it for you? So you're just believing whatever, you know, anyone says. I think that, you know, finding this happiness is really finding your core inner happiness, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual happiness, as you describe so beautifully in the book. Do you think that knowing that story is really integral to this, Lisa?
Well, the storytelling itself is integral. It's not only the stories that others tell about us that we believe, but it's the stories that we tell ourselves about who we think we are that usually don't actually serve our happiness, because they're rooted in the negative parts. You know, our thighs are too big. We've had abuse in our past. We've just gotten out of a crappy marriage, or perhaps we're in a crappy marriage. This is human storytelling, which we are wired to tell our stories, but we don't need to be defined by them. There was a wonderful video that I saw recently. I think the name of it is Everybody Dies, But Not Everybody Lives. And the video talks about you cannot rewrite history, but you can write a brand new ending.
Wow, what an interesting perspective. You know, I love the title of that video as well. You know, people really need to understand whether or not they're truly authentically living. There's a book I love to quote a lot, and that is a fabulous book that came into my hands several years ago, and it was written by an Australian hospice nurse. And her name is Bronnie, of course, it's Australian, Bronnie Ware. And it's called The Five Regrets of the Dying. Now, she, of all people, doing what she does for a living, should know. And one of them is whether or not you really led a life that you defined, that you authentically embraced as your very own, that you weren't people-pleasing and doing everyone else's bidding, but it was all about you. How many people on their deathbed regretted the fact that they never lived like that? Is that part of the harvesting happiness?
Indeed. Indeed it is. It's about living the life you desire living and not being bound by that history that we all come with, and understanding that without those bad things that have happened in our lives, we wouldn't be shaped and transformed into our best, brightest self. We can be limited by what has happened to us, certainly, and many of us are. And then there are those of us that decide to go out there and train for the marathon because that's a much more happy place to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you're singing my song.
I know.
But there it is. Nonetheless, I know you were just playing right into my hand on that one. Listen, you talk about 8 keys for living a joyful life. Come on, share some, Lisa. What are those 8 keys?
Oh, well, you know, here are some of the things. You can understand that. Let me just say, not understand. I'm just going to put it out there quite bluntly. Life is tough. In each and every one of our lives, we are going to endure pain. But the suffering is optional, right? That's, you know, one key.
Yeah.
And then what do we do with that material, right? That's the other part of the equation. The other is that we have the ability to be our own guru. I mean, there are tens of thousands of self-help books out there in the world, and a lot of them do a lot of good. But at the end of the day, if we're not tapping into our intuition, if we're not learning how to listen to that inner voice and trust the inner voice, then we're really bypassing probably the greatest teacher we could have. So that's another little nugget. And then
keep
the other
it coming.
Keep it coming. And then the other is the appreciation that we are taught in the Western world. We are mass media marketing junkies, each one of us. Talk about addiction. I'm not even talking about pills and drugs, other drugs, but we are taught that more is better. And I really believe after years of research and years of living and being a reformed depressed person myself, that more is not always better. And how can we reframe our relationship to stuff?
Oh, I love that. Reframe our relationship to stuff.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You know, now I understand where all this minimalist stuff comes from because, you know, to a certain degree, it's so freeing to be able to kind of feng shui yourself into a room. You could actually see white space. It's like, oh my gosh, the first time I ever made this discovery about my own desk, you know, instead of really making it look more like Albert Einstein's idea of a great day to throw paper all over his desk, I just said, no, I need to have an open space to think, to create, to be. And that's when I began to redefine my own relationship with stuff. So I love that. What are other keys?
Oh, well, here's another one that I think that the listeners will find very interesting. Most of us are ruled by the desire for control. I think you and I could agree with that. We love to control everything that we can. And it's human nature, right?
Right.
But there is only one thing that we can control, and that is ourselves. And the one that
That's
is
right.
the most often, the deeply challenging one to control. So, you know,
yeah,
the book
go
offers
figure.
You know, tips. Go figure. Tips, tools, and strategies for how to get the locus of control back to the individual, which again is, you know, in part perception, or, you know, switching the colored of our lenses through which we view and experience life.
I think we call it reframing, right?
Yeah. We call it reframing, perception shifting is another way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's Well, you look at trauma. I mean, I know that you focus on addiction trauma and life crisis recovery. And in trauma, which involves abuse as well, clearly.
Yes.
You know, to get yourself out of that, don't you have to reframe and change the context? I mean, how do you do that in your own practice as you're helping people harvest happiness where there is only trauma and abuse in their mind?
Yes. Well, firstly, one has to feel that they've been seen, heard, and understood. And somebody who has experienced trauma needs to share their story. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be with a psychologist or a psychiatrist. It can be with a peer, with a clergy member, with a support group, with a relative. The idea is we need to really have our stories be known. And oftentimes there's so much shame, guilt, humiliation, and embarrassment surrounding the trauma that there's energy that is being stored in the body by not being able to release the grief, the anger, the rage over the violation. And I'm not just speaking of a physical abuse violation. There are numbers of violations out there that go on between us humans. So there is that, the ability to release what has gone on. Then there comes the next part of the equation, and these are never done in a direct order. There isn't an exact roadmap for doing this. It's individual, although the steps are very similar. The beginning to suss out the learnings that come from these great tragedies that happen to us, because it's not the issue itself that is the problem. It's our relationship to what happened.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, I'm always looking for those lessons in everything that happens in life. You just never know. You know, I've dealt with a lot of Holocaust survivors and their families. And wow, now that's a tough population. And the ones who show the greatest stress resilience, very much like Viktor Frankl, for instance, in the writing of his books and his wonderful work, you know, they really show an extraordinary ability to flex their emotional, spiritual muscle by adapting and adjusting even to the most horrific of circumstances. I always go back to Charles Darwin's wonderful quote, and that is, it's not the smartest who survive, it's not the strongest who survive, it's those who can adapt who survive.
Yes.
And I think that's something I know that you really foster in your own practice with harvesting happiness, right?
Indeed. And Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning is a perfect example. Viktor Frankl was a psychologist who was in the concentration camps and wrote about his observations that in spite of these horrendous lives that people were living, at the same time that bad things were happening and suffering was going on, there were marriages, there were births, there were life celebrations, bar and bat mitzvahs, or not bat mitzvahs at the time, but bar mitzvahs that were going on in the concentration camps. And Dr. Frankl was curious, what is this element that separates those who wither and perish versus those who continue to have the will to survive and make meaning out of those circumstances. And that, you know, hence the name of the book. And then later on, he continued to write about how one survives these horrible events, and that is making meaning out of the event and making a meaningful life afterward.
You know, one of my most favorite quotes that I use so often from Frankl's work is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is the power to choose. And in that choice lies your growth and freedom. And, you know, the group that I work with, that I really love using this quote with, are people in the addiction community, because they're so sensitive to life itself. They feel so overwhelmed in about 5 seconds that they knee-jerk into a need to numb. And I ask them to pause in that space Is that what you do too when you're working with this addiction community? Because I know that that's a really important group of clients and men and women that you work with.
In the addiction recovery work that I do, I love to point out to clients that we are afraid of our feelings, especially, well, we're afraid of the unpleasant ones, definitely. So we're afraid of our feelings, and we go to a substance or a behavior to take us out of that discomfort. So we therefore have a very low distress tolerance. And yet, the very thing that we need to do is lean into those feelings. But the feeling about the feeling is that we're going to die if we allow ourselves to experience that feeling. When the reality is, we will not die from our feelings, but we could die from the substance abuse.
Oh, yes. No question about it. And separating those two, because, you know, as you said so beautifully, it's a psychobiological play. There's all of this going on at the same time. And it's just being able to help these people understand that one of the greatest Achilles heels of the addiction community is the lack of stress resilience, the difficulty in adapting and adjusting without knee-jerking into seeking those anesthetics that are so important. You know, you said at one point, because I know you deal so much with people who have emotional and mood issues as well, that you're a reformed depressive. What does that mean?
Well, I come from a long line of depressed people. In my family history, there is depression. There are other mental illnesses. There is addiction. There was suicide. And I got the gene, and I have experienced a very dark depression once in my life. And it was really a very, very difficult and challenging year. I did all the right things for my caring keeping. It had a natural life cycle, which I found very difficult to trust at first. My doctor said, you know, this could last a year, but it will come to a natural conclusion. It was very organic, but it was brought on. It was a midlife crisis at the age of 30 when I had sold a business and ended a relationship of 10 years where my identity was gone. I was no longer that professional person, no longer the fiance of that person. I was a free agent in search of a new identity and meaning. So it was actually a very appropriate response to a life crisis. And yet, because we have such low distress tolerance as human beings, we dislike our comfort, we tend to bypass the uses of adversity.
Interesting. What do you mean by that, we bypass the uses of adversity?
Well, because we are so adverse to feeling depressed, we are so adverse to feeling lousy, to feeling sadness, to feeling grief, even to feeling our anger and rage, we do anything possible to get out of it. When in fact, when these emotions well up inside of us, it is really that intuitive part, right? The higher self telling us that something in our life is no longer working as well as it should be or could be. And we want to turn it off. We want to tune out rather than lean in and see what this adversity is telling us about ourselves, which is where we have that control. If we really look at what is, right? If we really look at that, we can start to take control back, even though we may be in emotional free fall.
You know, when I discovered that as well, you know, I usually have phrased it to people, sit with it. Something just happened. Just sit with it. Just allow it. It's very Zen, you know, just as, you know, something has happened, you sit there and the way I visualize it is I see beautiful, fluffy white clouds just sort of, you know, passing above you with the wind. And it's just, and you attach one of those events or thoughts onto one of those clouds, and it's passing by, and you observe it, and you sit with it. And by doing so, you're really, for all intent and purposes, in that space that Viktor Frankl talked about. You're sitting in that space and allowing yourself to absorb it and not be afraid, not to fear it, because it's part of life. And, you know, just allow it to be there and then just to sort of move from there. And that's why I love, for instance, the incredible work that you're doing with our veterans who have this kind of pain all the time, everything from trauma to addiction, you know, spanning the full spectrum of mental health conditions, including PTSD. Tell us about Harvesting Happiness for Heroes.
Harvesting Happiness for Heroes is a nonprofit I started many years ago to work with veterans on a pro bono basis to offer them stigma-free recovery coaching. So it's, you know, taking some of these principles that you and I have just discussed and applying it to the war experience. And at first, people are a little bit curious. You know, you want me to harvest happiness after and then go ahead and fill in the blanks. I don't think you need me to do that. And, you know, the answer to that question is yes. And let me explain to you why and why you already possess the tools with which to do that. Our military is trained in mindfulness. They're not trained in mindfulness in the way that you and I would think of, like the Zen that you just mentioned, but they are trained to track fully in the present moment because that's what keeps them alive on the battlefield. So if you can allow a soldier to understand that they already possess the tool for presence, they possess the tools to be that neutral observer and that witness, because that's where they have to decide when they're going to act, right? They already have the skills and tools. What's missing oftentimes when people come home from war is the transition time that used to occur in battle when they would come on a ship for a month or 6 weeks. So there's no transition time. They're in theater one day, they're in the supermarket the next. You know, that scene from Hurt Locker where the guy's trying to figure out what cereal to buy, right?
Exactly. So
there's no decompression, right? There's no understanding of that rapid change, you know, toggling from one environment to the other. There is no reframing of the event. And most importantly, in my experience, is there's no redefinition of the mission because these men and women are mission-driven. That's what they're trained to do. And that's why doing sports, getting them back into their bodies, giving them a new sense of purpose and mission in life, even if it's volunteer work in the beginning, you know, show up for somebody else for an hour a day, you know, you have a place to be. And this is just good sound advice for anybody who is struggling emotionally. There is more to the PTS or post-traumatic stress story, but I think the most hopeful part of the equation is post-traumatic growth. You know, the transformation and transcendence from the trauma into growth, where one can say, you know, I went through X, Y, and Z. It was really hard, but as a result, I learned X, Y, and Z about myself and became this person I never knew I had the capacity to be.
Oh, I absolutely love this. I think everyone out there needs to know that if they want to learn more about this Harvesting Happiness for Heroes, they just need to go to your that one website, HH4, the number 4, heroes.org. And also know that Lisa wrote Harvesting Happiness for Heroes, Reintegration Strategies for Depression, Anxiety, Anger, Grief, and PTSD. I want to congratulate you, Lisa, for being of service to the veterans. That is so terribly important. I think all of us need to do that, to be of service to humanity one way or the other. But this is such a phenomenal gift of your coaching skills and your expertise in this field.
Thank you. Well, it's an honor to do the work, and it is, and it's joy making, you know, even to sit with somebody in their darkness. And this is really a very helpful tool for everybody. It allows us to connect with our humanity. You know, when we can extend kindness, compassion, and empathy. And by empathy, I mean, you know, putting ourselves in someone else's shoes and imagining ourselves in their circumstances, even though it might not touch our life in any way, that's where we meet at the heart. And not only is it what Viktor Frankl's talking about, but, you know, the great poet Rumi talks about, you know, Rumi's field, you know, out there in that space between wrong and right, there is a place, and I will meet you there.
There you go. Again, another one of my favorite poets. Unbelievable. You know, you mentioned the word coaching. Tell us about the nature of coaching and wraparound services for lifestyle management versus traditional therapy, because you've mentioned coaching a number of times. Maybe help our HER podcast listeners understand what that is.
Well, traditional talk therapy is where we generally report to our therapist and we talk about the things that are wrong with our lives. We talk about wounds and events that happened in the past. And we, you know, and it's kind of an emotional purgative, which sometimes is really required, but it doesn't necessarily move us forward. Coaching, on the other hand, takes into account a client's goals, where they want to go in life. What's the actual vision that you hold for your life on every level? You know, your personal life, your professional life. What are those things that you want to achieve? And then coaching meets the client through an accountability partnership, support, cheerleading, space holding. You know, these are some of the terms I love to use. Belief in another, while they may not have belief in themselves, to move forward. You know, laying out action steps and being accountable to meeting those goals on a very defined schedule, on a very defined program that's always subject to change and to adapt. It does not deal with the processing of past memories. It deals with the development of a roadmap for the future.
Wow, that's a great way to put it. And I think a lot of people want to have an action-oriented plan to really be able to rock and roll with. And therefore, services like yours and your expertise are literally priceless and life-saving for so many people out there. Everyone, we've been talking to Lisa Sybers-Kamen. She is the author of Are We Happy Yet? 8 Keys for Living a Joyful Life. By the way, she's also got a wonderful talk radio show, which I've had the pleasure and honor of being on, and I'm going to do it again and again and again, just like you're going to be on this podcast countless times, Lisa, because I think that what you have to say is just, it just echoes so many concerns and challenges of our wonderful listeners. And so we want to hear it again and again and go deeper and deeper. Her websites are harvestinghappiness.com, harvestinghappinesstalkradio.com, and then, as I mentioned before, the Harvesting Happiness for Heroes, which is heroes.org. And I just can't thank you enough for helping all of us today take a moment and understand the essentials of harvesting our own happiness. Lisa, thanks for being on the HER podcast.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Pam. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, and again and again. All right, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of HER. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds, even less, and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract more people just like you to the show, and that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, leave a review. Yeah, we read those things. I told you, we love to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes, and they're good. Thanks for listening, and stay well.